This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Paul Clements was the Democratic candidate challenging Fred Upton in Southwest Michigan's 6th Congressional District in 2014 and again in 2016. If he's going to be the Democratic nominee in 2018, he will have to emerge from a crowded primary. Clements is a political science professor at Western Michigan University, and he's one of 6 Democrats who are running for Congress in the 6th Congressional District. Paul Clements, thank you again for being here.
Thanks, Gordon. I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
So reintroduce yourself to our audience, those who know you. Perhaps introduce yourself to people who haven't heard of what you've done before, and tell us why you would again like to be the representative in Michigan's 6th Congressional District.
Thanks, Gordon. Yeah, I teach national economic development and evaluation here at Western Michigan University in our graduate programs. My family and I have been long-term members of First Presbyterian Church, where I chaired our outreach committee. I got us involved in the Michigan Organizing Project. I was one of the founding board members for Michigan United. I was on the Dispute Resolution and Services Advisory Board of Griffin Place. We introduced peer mediation here. I was a founding chair of the Kalamazoo Interfaith Coalition for Peace and Justice. And Gordon, as you know, I was one of the founders of our Western Michigan University Climate Change Working Group. You know, I'm running because this is really a dark time for our country. I've been going around the district, and people know that Congress has not been working for a long time, that under President Trump, it's been getting a lot worse in many different areas. You know, people feel that Congress has been neglecting their basic concerns, and that needs to change. We have the median wage in our district, which is just now getting back to where it was 20 years ago when corporate profits have been spiking. And still, we have seniors living in poverty. Healthcare costs. Many people cannot afford the copays or even still do not have insurance. Many of our students from here at Western are struggling under mountains of debt. And, you know, for the first time here in the United States, there are so many people who are concerned that the next generation, their kids, are not going to do as well as they did. And to turn that around, we have got to get Congress working effectively. Now, the biggest problem is money in politics. And Fred Upton has been a prime offender in this area. So I am certainly running for fundamental campaign finance reform to get that dark money out of politics. But in addition to that, there are 4 areas where we can make fundamental change that will make an enormous difference. The first one is we have a healthcare system that's twice expensive as other industrial countries and doesn't even provide as good health results. So I'm pushing for single-payer healthcare, where everyone can have access to basic health free of charge, where it covers dental, it covers mental health, it covers everything. You know, people know that we have here in Kalamazoo, the infant mortality rate among African Americans is 4 times higher than it's been among whites, and the health system is not addressing it. Our health system has not addressed the opioid epidemic. We can turn this one around. Secondly, our education system simply is not preparing many of our kids for a 21st century economy. And this requires a lot of change, but we start with getting really excellent preschool and daycare for every single child. Tim Bartik in Kalamazoo has done some of the basic research showing that it pays $10 for every dollar you invest in terms of better health, better education outcomes. We need to do so much better in vocational, with apprenticeships, with restoring the vocational programs in our middle schools and high schools. Our K through 12, we've been testing kids to death. We've been not respecting and supporting our teachers. The way to turn that around is to figure out, to get the information out there of what are proven methods that succeed in education, and giving teachers and administrators the information and supports they need to address those. We need to make community college and public university like this one free to get rid of that debt problem. And, you know, high school is not good enough anymore. We pay for that with a very small tax on stock transactions like other countries do to discourage speculation. Number 3, our criminal justice system. We have 2.3 million Americans behind bars, 3 to 5 times more the most industrial countries. Our criminal justice system is deeply biased and far too punitive. We can move about 1 million people from behind bars, from incarceration, back into the productive economy, back into the community. This is particularly a factor for our African-American community. They've been suffering the worst there, but it hurts all of us. We pay $35,000 a year to keep someone behind bars who, in if we deal with substance abuse, if we decriminalize marijuana, if we deal with mental health issues through our public health system rather than our criminal justice system, it'll save enormous sums of money, our communities will be working better, and we'll be better off overall. And fourth, we need to have a forward-looking economic policy. And that starts with investing in areas of greater demand, such as renewable energy, instead of coal. I mean, come on. But it's also food. America is a food exporter. One more thing, and that is part of forward-looking economy is a 21st century infrastructure with major investments in that area. And I'm you want to get into here, Gordon. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things you say on your website is that we need to do something to address the federal debt and deficit.
Certainly.
If you're going to invest in infrastructure, if you're going to make college affordable or even, you know, free for, you know, depending on where people fall in income,
sure.
If you're going to have a single-payer healthcare system that covers everything that you mentioned, can you do all that and at the same time bring down the debt and deficit?
You certainly can. I've already mentioned that you get the money for the education through a small speculation tax. With healthcare, it actually makes healthcare cheaper to cut out those enormous administrative expenses and profiteering. And when you're focusing on keeping people healthy rather than just fixing disease when it gets to be really serious. In terms of the infrastructure program, you know, this tax scam that Fred Upton pushed, that's adding $1.5 trillion to the deficit while also cutting taxes enormously for big corporations and for millionaires, I would work to repeal that and use some of those resources for the infrastructure investments that we need. And the point is that all of these are just good investments that pay for themselves far more than what you're investing, than what you're spending. So we can do that and reduce the deficit and also build a much stronger, more inclusive economy.
Is unfair trade hurting American workers?
Yes, it is. We still have supports. We still give tax breaks for corporations when they move jobs overseas. Some of our NAFTA, some of our trade deals allow for corporate negotiations when there's any kind of dispute where the local governments, where the workers don't have any kind of role. So we still do have some unfair trade. And you know, I certainly want to work to address that one as well. But if we compare that to the basics of education and healthcare and infrastructure, it's 10 to 1.
So specifically, though, on trade, is President Trump right to impose tariffs or propose tariffs on steel and aluminum?
This is such a bad move that Trump has made. Number one, it's going to raise costs for manufactured items, and it's particularly going to hurt Michigan because a lot of Michigan companies use aluminum and steel. It's just going to raise those costs. Number two, it seems very likely to spark a trade war, and a trade war is going to be disastrous for everybody.
What would make a sensible gun policy that you would be willing to vote for if you're a member of Congress?
You know, the first thing we need to recognize about gun policy is that we've got to get our Congress out of the stranglehold of the National Rifle Association. That's what's been blocking things. We've got to be able to actually do research on how to improve gun safety. And this is one thing where Fred Upton has not been willing to have a vote on allowing that kind of research to take place when he's been chairing the relevant committees. But, you know, these terrible massacres in our schools, it's time to get rid of assault rifles, for sure. It's time to have, you know, comprehensive background checks, not just spot checking, but for everyone, whether it's on the internet or whether it's at a gun show. It's time to raise the age to 21 years for when you can buy a weapon. We don't need to have teenagers out there holding, carrying guns. Those are certainly things that I would support.
You mentioned earlier the NRA. You also mentioned campaign finance. So those two things are obviously well connected. Well, what specifically would you want to see Congress do on campaign finance, realizing that at least for now, Citizens United is, you know, the law of the land because of the Supreme Court?
Campaign finance is absolutely the biggest reason that our Congress and, for that matter, our federal government are not working to address the needs of the people, that they're working to focus on the needs of the very wealthy who can have the armies of lobbyists and lawyers. So the first thing is transparency. Congress can certainly do this, make sure that any expenditure for any political purpose has to be reported and made public. If we want to get so that the candidates do not depend on big donations, there are other things we can do. Like one proposal out there is to say, all right, every voter can have a $50 ticket that they get from the federal government, and that would be matched by maybe 4 or 5 to 1. And so then they can give that to the candidate of their choice, let's say in a congressional election. And that way, then you don't have to go for the big money, but you do have to go for the support of lots of people within your district. That's one example. But there are other examples out there. If Congress wants to do it, whatever the Supreme Court is saying, we can find a way to do it.
So as I noted, you are making your third run at this congressional seat. The last two times, you were the only Democrat who got in the race. What does the fact that there are five other candidates who would like the Democratic nomination say to you?
Well, I think it's great. I think that having a lot more conversations across the district and holding Fred Upton accountable for his history of not being willing to participate in town meetings, for the fact that he gets way over half of his campaign finance money from out of state, mostly sourced from companies that he regulates, that he's been hurting our health care, that he's been pushing this tax scam. I think having this discussion going on in more places around the district is only for the better.
If there's a Democrat out there that really wants to win in November, and you're thinking, hey, Paul Clements ran twice and he didn't win, so maybe one of these other candidates is the right one to win this seat, which has been a Republican seat for as long as anyone can remember. What's the argument you would make to them to give you another look?
You know, Gordon, this is really a different political moment than what we've had in 2016, for sure. If we look at what happened after 2016 election, there was just a wave of political activity, and you know this, with people calling Fred for the first time on his failure to hold town meetings, weekly demonstrations in front of Fred's St. Joe office, and almost weekly here in Kalamazoo, calling him on his dark money history. So Fred has been held accountable in a way that he has not before. Then when he flip-flopped on health care back in May and he pushed a health care plan that would have kicked 40,000 people off health insurance in our district, well, that hurt him. At that time, his approval rating in our district fell to 39%, a number we haven't seen before. Now, I wasn't sure if I was going to run again, but I looked at that and I thought, well, maybe this is something. I looked at the other candidates, the Democrats who at that time were coming forward. And I felt that, you know, I bring the strongest package, both in terms of pushing forward the kind of agenda we need in Congress and in terms of defeating Fred. I did my own poll. It put me, this was in June, it put me at 42 to 44. Fred had 44, I had 42, but within the margin of error, a lot better than what I had seen before. And then in December, when Fred had been pushing this tax scam that adds $1.5 trillion to the deficit that mostly gives to millionaires, then his approval fell to 34%. It fell 5% more. I've got the most experience running a campaign. I'm running the strongest campaign. I'm going to be the congressman who can push forward the agenda that is really going to substantially improve the well-being of the people of this district. And so I think I'm the best.
I just want to note on what you mentioned there about approval rating and polls. The last several election cycles, even before you got into this, I have heard that there was a poll out there which showed Fred Upton was in trouble or he was vulnerable. And so far, that really hasn't shown up in the results of the November general election. So how do you take the data you have, which does show that, you know, there's an opening here, and actually go and close the deal with voters in November?
One is, again, we have to continue to hold Upton accountable for his failure to be responsive to the voters in terms of he's been unwilling to hold town hall meetings. He's been undermining our health care. He's been pushing for tax reform that serves the interest of millionaires. He is a prime offender in the dark money game, in the corporate finance game. He's been one of the people who has blocked information on how we can have more effective gun safety and gun control. Holding him accountable for his record. You have to have the resources to do that. You know, you run a couple times, and every time you run, like most things in life, experience helps. And I think that I'll be able to be more effective than our other Democratic candidates in holding Fred accountable, as I have on today's show. Secondly, I have built up just over time, I have the strongest name recognition, the strongest loyalty out across the district. And in terms of promoting an agenda that speaks to the deep dissatisfaction that people have with our Congress, that speaks to the fundamental changes that our government needs to make if it's going to be responsive to the concerns of the people of this district, I'm the candidate who's got that message.
Paul Clements, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Paul Clements is one of six Democrats running for Congress in Southwest Michigan's 6th Congressional District. The winner of the August primary will challenge Republican Congressman Fred Upton in the fall. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.